Hi, this is Corina Becco from Green Lantern Earth One, and you are entering the fan base.
Dear JJ, look, I know you have a daughter in her 20s, and so maybe that's why you don't seem to ever let truly bad things happen to the young female protagonists you've created. Instead, inflicting trauma on their friends for them to react to. But you know what? Sometimes bad things happen to sweet, talented young women. So maybe the same should hold true for young female protagonists. Maybe there's more hope in watching a young female protagonist overcoming her own trauma rather than living vicariously through someone else's.
It's just a little voice, and if you're listening, sometimes a little voice can say the biggest things. It's just my little voice that I've been missing. It's just my little voice that I've been missing.
Hey there, I'm Teresa Giacino, and welcome back to Finding Felicity, where we usually talk about life, love, and growing up, no matter how old you are, through the lens of the J.J. Abrams, Matt Reeves hit TV show Felicity. Now, I say usually because we've returned to do a special, quick and dirty, three-part podcast miniseries on a slightly infuriating but ultimately lovable curly-haired young woman making a go of it in New York City. One who isn't Felicity. I'm talking about Bess King, the protagonist of the new Apple TV Plus show Little Voice, created by J.J. Abrams, Sarah Bareilles, and Jesse Nelson. Abrams, of course, created Felicity, and has since gone on to create some other stuff too, good for him. Meanwhile, Sarah Bareilles is a Grammy-nominated singer-songwriter whose songs Love Song, King of Anything, and Brave you might know, and I personally happen to love. And Jesse Nelson is the writer-director of such films as Karina Karina and I Am Sam. She and Bareilles first came together as collaborators to create the Broadway musical Waitress, based on the film of the same name that starred Kerry Russell. See, it all comes together. Now, they've partnered with Abrams to create Little Voice, a half-hour comedy about singer-songwriter Bess King, a young woman with a deep desire to write songs and sing them, but not necessarily the confidence. Now, I was inspired to watch the show first because it was a new JJ offering, and second because it seemed so much like an updated take on Felicity. Felicity for the 21st century, if you will. So as I get ready to get into season two of Felicity later this year, with a whole new crop of Felicity fans to chat with and join me here on the podcast, I wanted to check in on this new offering and see how it stacks up, both as its own thing and as a spiritual successor to Felicity. I also wanted to get into life in one's post-college years. When we're talking about Felicity on this podcast, we generally talk about our former college selves. But how do I relate to this show's portrayal of a young woman's 20s? We will find out. But first, let's take a second to have a word from our favorite folks over at Fanbase Press.
Hi, this is Barbara Dillon, one of the co-hosts of Fanbase Press's flagship podcast, The Fanbase Weekly. During the Fanbase Weekly podcast, the co-hosts and I discuss the top geek news stories of the week. In each episode, we are joined by special guests from all across the pop culture spectrum to get their take on what's happening in geekdom. Past guests have included Jeffrey Thorne, writer of Leverage and The Librarians, Debbie Lynn Smith of Chimera Press, Xena Warrior Princess executive producer Stephen L. Sears, Jason Inman, and Ashley B. Robinson of Geek History Lessons, and many, many more. Join us for an episode of the podcast that celebrates fandoms on a weekly basis. A new episode of the Fanbase Weekly is released every Monday. Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or look for the podcast at fanbasepress.com.
Welcome back to our special podcast mini-series, Finding Felicity's Little Voice. There are going to be 9 episodes of Little Voice in this first season on Apple TV+. And so for each of these 3 podcast episodes, we'll be focusing on 3 episodes of the show. This week, we're going to be talking about episode 1, titled I Don't Know, written and directed by Jesse Nelson. Episode 2, called I Will Survive, written by Daniel Goldfarb and directed by Christopher Storer. And episode 3, called Dear Hope, written by Cherian Debis, or Dabis, I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing that horribly, and directed by Suzanne Heathcote. So if you care about such things, I will be talking about these episodes as if you've already watched them. Spoilers ahead, you've been warned. Now, in these episodes, we meet Bess. That's B-E-S-S, in case you're hearing it as Beth as in Elizabeth. Although, I guess they're part of the same name. Anyway, we meet Bess, played by Brittany O'Grady, and we learn that she's working 3 jobs to make ends meet. She's a dog walker, she does music lessons, and she's a bartender. She does all this to be able to pay rent on the New York City apartment she shares with her best friend, Prisha, played by Shalini Bathana. Right from jump, we also learn that she fiends for songwriting, taking opportunities to get lyrics down any chance she gets, no matter what she's doing. Later, we learn that she has a brother named Louis, played by Kevin Valdez, a Broadway show aficionado who is on the autism spectrum and is newly living in an assisted living situation after having previously lived with Bess and her dad. Louis is a goddamn delight, and we will get to him later. We'll then meet the first point of Bess's inevitable love triangle in Ethan, played by Sean Teal, a gruff British dude who edits videos of old people dancing and, gasp, has a girlfriend. The other point of the triangle is Samuel, played by Colton Ryan, a musician who plays with other acts at the bar where Bess works and who eventually plays with her in her first gigs. Bess's relationship with both of these men is, we will get to that. Lastly, there's Bess's dad, Percy, played by Chuck Cooper, who apparently used to be a bigger time kind of jazz musician, but now busks in the subway and in the park with this a cappella group that Bess jumps in with sometimes. They all kind of sing together and she kind of pops in and out. Now, in this first trio of episodes, Bess plays her first, quote, professional gig. And yes, the word professional needs to be in quotes. She enters a songwriting contest with the theme hope. She gets to know Ethan and Samuel, and she helps Louis adjust to living life more independently. We also see Prisha dealing with coming out to her very traditional Indian parents as queer, as she both hides her romantic relationship with a female band member. By the way, Prisha is in this like multicultural mariachi band. I don't know. And she experiences a hate crime when a white dude in Washington Square Park throws a bottle at her while spitting racist and homophobic slurs at her and her girlfriend. All this time, Bess's biggest problem is stage fright. And yeah, let's get right into it. Now, I always want to start with what I enjoy about anything. So I want to talk about what I genuinely enjoy about the show. First of all, I am a sucker for artist insecurity shows. That's right up my alley. I know a lot of people who either work in Hollywood or are artists are kind of tired of, or they don't like seeing like artist shows or artists writing about being artists. I don't care. I love that stuff. It speaks directly to my soul and to my ego. So I am totally a sucker for watching this girl and her creative process. I love Louis. Like I said, he is a delight. Kevin Valdez gives a great performance, and I am so excited that they have actors on the autism spectrum, neurodiverse actors, playing roles on the show. And I relate to his whole storyline because several members of my family are on the autism spectrum, and I am so thrilled that sweet and loving representation like this exists. I love the relationship between Louis and Bess. It is so sweet. It's so real as well. Like the best thing about Louis is that he is not inspiration. He is not someone to be pitied. He's not someone that we're, you know, he's not tropey at all, at least in any ways that I can pick up. Bess and he fight. They're brother and sister. She calls him on his nonsense. He definitely calls her on his nonsense because he has no filter. Calls her on her nonsense because he has no filter. And it's great to see kind of the real nitty gritty of what happens as you get older on the autism spectrum. Very often we see portrayals of autistic children. You know, it's rarer that we see what happens when someone with autism gets older and what they have to deal with and what their life is like. And we are seeing Louis come into his own as he has moved into this assisted living facility, this home with other roommates who are also on the spectrum, each trying to apply for jobs and all of that good stuff. A big plot point in episode two of the three that we're discussing is Louis trying to apply for a job as an usher at a theater. He loves the theater. He loves Broadway. It's one of his and Bess's shared loves, and he wants to be a Broadway usher. So that whole storyline is great and really well done. I also love Prisha, Bess's friend, who I love that we get this complex stuff going on with her and her relationship to her queerness through the lens of her culture. Very often we see, when we see queerness at all on TV, it's generally white people. Or at the very least, it might be people of color, but who are American. Looking at, you know, Prisha, who is Indian American, dealing with having to come out to her parents who are immigrants is a very different thing. And I know, you know, I have several friends who, you know, having that push and pull between being American and wanting to appreciate their parents and their culture and having to come out as queer all at the same time, it can be a lot. And so watching Prisha deal with that feels very real. It feels very lived in, and it's something that we don't see often. So I love that. Speaking of, I kind of love the genuine diversity that the show has. There are people of color on this show. There are neurodiverse actors. It's a female-led cast. And of these three first episodes that we're talking about, two of them were written and directed by women. Not only that, but there's also a realistic portrayal of class. Bess has three jobs and she still needs a roommate. That is so real. So there's a lot of good stuff going on here. And, you know, just as a show, it's sweet and it is trying to be a balm in these bananas times that we are going through right now. Now, getting into what the show could do better. This is coming from Felicity, but all the way to now. Personally, I think that the trope of the love triangle needs to die in a fire. Falling for or having complicated relationships or a complicated relationship with one person is dramatic enough. You don't need to have drama by having, you know, one person dealing with feelings about two people. It doesn't always need to be a choice between two people. Sometimes there's drama just in your feelings for one person. I know, because I've been there. Now, if I had to pick one of these dudes that she is dealing with to deepen the relationship, I would choose Samuel. The relationship that she has with Ethan, and right from the first episode, he's the first one that she meets. He is, first of all, she rents a storage space, like a self-storage space in New York City to basically as a place to keep her instruments and to rehearse. She uses it kind of like a rehearsal studio. And next door is this guy, Ethan, who has his office set up and he has all his editing equipment in the space next to hers. And so they meet because he shows up while she's practicing. She doesn't want anybody listening to her. And it's this weirdly hostile and awkward meet cute, except it's not cute. Like, I don't know. It's just, it's very much, she starts imposing herself on his space. And we're supposed to think it's endearing. I don't know. And then he for some reason puts up with her, I guess because she's cute. I don't know. It just, it strikes all the wrong chords. Whereas her meeting with Samuel is more genuine. It's more organic. She has an opportunity to sing at the bar where she works, and one of the musicians falls through, and she gets the chance to kind of jump in and take over and do a set. And she decides to take that chance and sing her own music, even though she's terrified and has to be convinced to do so. But Samuel is the musician on stage, and he agrees to play with her, he lets her play his guitar, use the piano that's already on stage. And from there, they develop a relationship based on the music. They start playing together, and there's clearly this kind of like buzzy, kind of bantery, but also argumentative streak between the two of them that feels much more real and much more organic than anything she has going on with Ethan. Ethan just kind of seems shoehorned in. Nothing against the actors, but the way it is presented, it just doesn't work. Also, I just have to say, he did not owe her an explanation for having a girlfriend at all. He knew her for 5 minutes. I guess for some reason that was not obvious. She thought that he might be interested in her or something. And then he shows up at her bar and his girlfriend shows up at the bar. And she has this look like, oh, I didn't know you had a girlfriend. And he feels the need to apologize. Like, why? You owe her nothing. You've known each other 5 minutes. Anyway, so I wish this show didn't have a love triangle. I wish they weren't trying to do that Felicity thing of a Ben Knoll Felicity whatever. If it were just her and Samuel trying to deal with their feelings for each other, that would have been plenty of drama for this show. Getting into the music for a little bit, Little Voice, which is the not only the name of the show, but also the name of the theme song. It is it was going to be the title track of Sarah Bareilles's debut album, also called Little Voice. And it ended up not making the album. And I have to say, as much as I love Bareilles's music in general, I am a huge fan of hers. The music that's used that she has given to Bess seems like Bareilles cast-offs. It seems like the stuff that she got rid of that didn't want to use for herself, and they're not quite good enough for an album, so now Bess is stuck with them. I really was hoping to enjoy the musical bits more, but I felt the urge to fast-forward through all the songs. If I were in the audience with Bess playing any of these songs, I would absolutely be talking to a friend most of the way through her performance and probably say something like, she has a great voice, but these songs are boring. I really wish I could like the music more. I love her voice. I love listening to her. I wish the material were better. And I wish these songs actually sounded like something Bareilles would write and put on an album. Now, getting into Bess, because a lot of the weakness of the show has to do with Bess, which is kind of a big deal considering she's the protagonist. I don't buy Bess's insecurity about her music as presented on this show. She grew up with a musician father. She writes songs all the time. And I don't buy that one bad performance that she experienced. The whole premise of this is that she doesn't want to perform her songs in public because she had one terrible performance where people talk shit about her, and now she doesn't want to perform ever again. And I don't buy that. I don't buy that someone who grew up with music, who grew up with a performer dad, who grew up writing songs, would be that put off by one bad experience. I would imagine that somebody like Bess has taken opportunities to perform all over the place. I mean, and we know that she sings covers. She, you know, and I get that there's a difference that it's her own material, right? Our material is our baby. We get very sensitive about it. But I can't believe that she is only now performing her own material, that she has only ever done covers up until now. Being who she is, knowing the musicalness of her family, that's just something I don't believe. And so everything in the show is trying to convince us that she is just so terrified of sharing her songs. And it's like, she would have been sharing her songs from the time she was like in high school. I mean, So that's something that I have trouble with, being an artist myself and knowing how sensitive I get about my own material. And yet I feel this urge to share it anyway. I have to. It's a need. It's not something I can decide to do. And I don't think that it would be something that Bess could decide to do either. Do I get the possibility that she might think her songs are terrible? Of course. Do I think that she would be insecure once people hear them and give her bad feedback? Of course. I don't think she would be stopped from sharing it. So that's kind of a sticking point for me in the enjoyment of the show. Kind of in this vein of her insecurity, something else I don't believe is all the things that we hear about her. We're told things about Bess that we don't see. Her friend Benny, who I didn't mention, but he is her friend. He ends up trying to be her manager. He works with her at the bar. He's a cool, you know, fun-loving guy. Benny calls her at one point a hopeaholic in the episode Dear Hope. And I have to say, if she lets one bad show stop her from performing, is she a hopeaholic? Benny calls her funny. He says, "You're so funny. You're hilarious." But is she? Like, she's not really funny. There are things that she does that are funny to us as a viewer, like when she bumbles through banter and all of that stuff, but she's not funny by nature. Like, she doesn't tell jokes. And the one time that I thought she was funny was when Benny is trying to teach her how to market herself, and she needs to be a cross between so-and-so and so-and-so. And she says, "Alicia Cara meets Carole King," and then she says, "meets Betty White," because Betty White likes dogs. And I thought that was great. And I was like, if she said that on stage, I would think that was great. I mean, the way that the Golden Girls are like the jam now, and that kids who weren't even born when the Golden Girls were on are like wearing Golden Girls t-shirts and, you know, doing Golden Girls memes. Like, if she said that she was like part Betty White, that would be great. And I thought that was funny. And that was the one thing that Benny hated and thought was not funny. And I'm like, Benny, you know nothing. But getting back to stuff that people say about her, Ethan says that he's never met anyone like her. And I'm like, dude, you need to get out more. Yes, she has a great voice, but there's literally nothing about her that stands out in particular. We're constantly being directed to see special things in her, but not shown them. Though actually, the things that I think are special about her, her sweet relationship with Louis, or her kindness in dealing with the kids and the elderly people she teaches, the kindness that actually makes her special is stuff that these guys don't have any experience with. So all they're noticing is that she's pretty and she can sing, and this blows them away. One of the larger things that I noticed about how Bess is written that didn't bug me until my second viewing of these episodes is the fact that she talks to Prisha about her experiences as a person of color as if she isn't one herself. She seems shocked by what Prisha goes through, despite the fact that, one, she lives in New York, two, she is herself biracial, and three, she has a very black dad. Her naivete over Prisha's situation is mind-boggling to me, and it feels like they created Bess as a white character, then wanted to cast inclusively, but then didn't take into account that having a person of color in this role might need to change the writing. Actually, for the episode Dear Hope, it was directed by Cherian Dabis, who is herself a Palestinian-American woman. And that was the episode where we see Prisha experience this crime. Prisha's stuff was handled really well and was relatable. And I'm sure that Dabis's direction and the handling of that had to come, you know, came from her own personal experience of just what it's like to be of a family where your parents or grandparents might have come from somewhere else. So that was handled well. But I wonder if there were any black people involved in this writer's room at all, where they're having this conversation and Bess is acting so surprised and is so naive about it. It felt like watching Felicity reacting to something like this for the first time. But Felicity's white and Bess is not. And that's a difference that is not being addressed. So that kind of threw me for a loop. So now I always want to talk about the show on its own first before getting into the Felicity comparison. So this was my bit just about Little Voice on its own, the stuff I liked, the stuff I didn't like. But after this brief break, I'll talk about how Little Voice compares to that other show about a creative young woman in New York City. Welcome back to part one of Finding Felicity's Little Voice. Something occurred to me as I was watching Dear Hope, episode 3, the episode where Prisha experiences a hate crime. It reminded me a lot of the Julie rape storyline on Felicity, season 1 of Felicity. On that show, Felicity gets totally wrapped up in the drama of Julie's situation as if it's her own. But it's not. Likewise, Bess. I find it very interesting that both of these characters have a tendency to deflect from dealing with their own feelings and their own lives by focusing a lot on the lives of their friends and getting really involved and obsessing over it and letting whatever's happening with their friends take up their whole day as if they don't have lives to lead themselves. Now, obviously, both of these characters are very caring. And of course, something happens to your friend, you want to be there for them. You're going to be worried about them. You want them to pull through, to do well. You want to be supportive. I get all that. But both of these characters do have a tendency to kind of use their friends' goings on as an excuse. And something that I noticed too is that, as I mentioned, it seems like this character is having things shown to her, happening around her, rather than anything happening directly to her. She doesn't get to experience anything herself. It's always secondhand trauma that she's using then to process her feelings about her songs. What would happen if something actually happened to her that made her struggle with hope? Instead, this hate crime happens to Prisha, and Bess obsesses over it all day, and it, throws a wrench in the works as she's trying to write a song themed around hope for this song contest. She can't do it until, of course, at the end, she pulls through, she finds a way in, she writes her song. But it feels hollow because the feelings that she's having aren't even feelings about something that happened in her own life. It's secondhand stuff that, she's just kind of using. It's like she's living on other people's fumes. It's weird. So that was an interesting similarity between Bess and Felicity. And it's not a similarity that I think is that great. And it's a problem that I had with Felicity in that, she was so involved with other people. And I get if that's a commentary on the character, like this is a character who is trying to deflect. But this character in particular, Bess King, she has an outlet in her songwriting. So I don't know. The deflection doesn't make sense. It's very strange. But that is a similarity that I noticed. Now, something else, another similarity between Bess and Felicity that came up involves the word earnest. Bess, in these episodes, calls her music earnest. And lots of reviews and press around this show have called it earnest as well. People talk about the music, they talk about the character. And just for funsies, since that word has been getting thrown around a lot with relation to the show, I looked up the actual dictionary definition of earnest. Dictionary.com says that earnest is resulting from or showing sincere and intense conviction. Merriam-Webster characterizes, defines earnest as characterized by or proceeding from an intense and serious state of mind. So in order to be earnest, you are sincere, you are intense, you are serious, and you have conviction. So that's all you need to be earnest. Sincerity, intensity, seriousness, and conviction. And yet when we hear the word earnest applied to a show like Little Voice or a character like Felicity, the connotations are kind of different. We hear earnest and we automatically assume sweetness, naivete, kindness, niceness. It's a very saccharine word when it's used in relation to these. And I don't know if that's because these are, you know, female-centric shows or what, but the word earnest takes on a connotation that it doesn't actually have, or it shouldn't actually have. Because earnest simply means having sincere and serious conviction. So a woman or a show can be earnest and dark. You can be earnest and caustic. You can be sincere and arrogant, sincere and angry. And yet, and this is a problem, you know, not just on television shows, but in real life, women generally aren't allowed or encouraged to be angry or dark. Both Felicity and Bess are perpetually sweet, even when terrible stuff happens. And when they do finally blow a gasket or do something bananas, like Felicity's frequent boundary crossing, or Bess barking at guys she suspects are making fun of her brother, or barking at Sam or Ethan, she barks at men for no reason a lot on this show, just as a reflex. Anyway, whenever something like that happens where one of these female characters blows a gasket, it's framed as wacky or cute or eccentric, something to be coddled and forgiven, something sweet if misguided. The bite is taken out of it. The, you know, any acidity that would have been there from this character's anger is kind of dissipated. Now, I obviously haven't gotten past season one of Felicity, so I don't know how Felicity evolves yet. And likewise, I'm only on episode 3 of Little Voice. And I imagine, I hope, that there's more in store for us as far as Bess's evolution. But right now, it seems like the show is reaching for ways to make Bess insecure so that she can be sweet and innocent and nervous all the time. But what if she weren't insecure about her songwriting? What if that were the one thing she were sure about? What if the hope in the show came from watching her do show after miserable show, firmly believing, having that intense, serious conviction about her talent, even if nobody else does, and constantly getting her ass handed to her, but then keeping going? And what if her insecurity came from the rest of her life? Like, she's absolutely secure in her songwriting, but because she's been so focused on that, relationships are a problem. And guys don't find her charming for no reason. Or at the very least, what if things happened to her as opposed to around her? What if she actually had to deal with a hard thing other than her own insecurity? What if the world actually dealt her a bad hand as opposed to characters telling us about her bad hand or bad things happening to people around her that she has to absorb? What if she had to deal with a hard thing earnestly? Before we wrap up, I did want to touch on the way that Little Voice portrays this young woman's life in her 20s. Now, Sarah Bareilles and I are the same age, and I know that a lot of this show comes from her lived experience as a young musician. A lot of what's portrayed in Bess's life feels really familiar. Like the needing to work 3 jobs and still have a roommate to make ends meet in New York City. I was in my 20s there in the early aughts, and as an aspiring artist myself, I had several freelance jobs and shared rent on a house with 4 other people in Queens, each of whom had multiple jobs. What I noticed, though, is that while this portrayal seems familiar to me and reflects what Bareilles, who is my age, may have gone through as well, it doesn't seem to reflect what people in their 20s are going through now, not in a way that is specific to this current generation. It kind of feels like a period piece. The idea that Bess wouldn't have a YouTube channel where she puts her songs up or put them up on her Instagram a la Gracie Abrams, whose EP Minor came out recently and is really, really good. But the fact that she doesn't have that kind of an online outlet is unfathomable to me. Even if she's shy about performing her own songs live, and kind of especially if she's shy about performing her own songs live. I can't imagine any 20-something today with that kind of passion and drive for singing and songwriting not putting their work online, even if it's anonymous. Oh, and one more thing. I don't buy that she's paying rent on an apartment and renting a storage space to use as a rehearsal studio. It's like $200 a month for a storage unit that size in New York City. Also, people in New York have a way higher noise tolerance when living in apartments than Bess's neighbors seem to have. Bess playing guitar and singing softly would not prompt neighbors to tell her to shut up. She was as loud as like a TV or a music speaker. Anyway, Little Voice is only 9 episodes this season, so I'm seeing it through to the end. But I hope that the show picks up a little more steam and allows Bess a little more license to be sure of herself or gives her something to do or to experience that is more than just watching her friends go through things or experiencing a love triangle. The show seems to be about Bess eventually finding her little voice. I guess I wish I could buy that she wouldn't already be using it, considering what we know about her. New episodes of Little Voice drop every Friday on Apple TV+, and new Finding Felicity episodes, like the one you've been listening to, also drop on Fridays. Next week, in part 2 of our 3-part Little Voice miniseries, we'll be talking about episodes 4, 5, and 6. But in the meantime, I want to leave you all with a little question, in the spirit of our Felicity Pod cues. Our question this week is, what song makes you feel hopeful? I may or may not create a hopeful voice playlist on Spotify with your selections, so send me the songs that fill you with hope. You sure as hell could use as much hope as possible these days. You can shoot all of those wonderful selections to me by emailing us at findingfelicitypod@gmail.com, by tweeting us at findfelicitypod, or responding to the discussion thread on our Facebook page or Instagram with the hashtag #littlequestion. And all of this will be in the show notes, so you can look down below the episode for all that information. And now that our podcast is at Anchor, we're able to accept voice messages from all of you. So if you want to send us a voice message that we might include in a future listener feedback segment with your hopeful song and why you love it, head on over to our Anchor homepage at anchor.fm/finding-felicity-pod. Again, this is all in the show notes. Link below. You can also send us messages with questions about Felicity, about Little Voice, or any other questions you've got, and we will do our best to respond. Support Finding Felicity by visiting our Pomonok Entertainment Patreon. We haven't been active on that very much lately, but now that we're bringing the podcast back, we will be doing more over there. So if you want to support the podcast or any of our other work, please visit patreon.com/teampomonok. As for me, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Teresa Giacino, or check out my personal website at teresagiacino.com. Again, new episodes of Finding Felicity drop every Friday, and Finding Felicity is part of the Fanbase Press podcast network and is co-produced by Fanbase Press and Pomonok Entertainment. Our original Finding Felicity logos were created by Noel Rivera, and the special logos for this miniseries were created by Fanbase Press's Barbara Dillon. The snippet of the Little Voice theme that we use at the top of these episodes is written and produced and performed by Sarah Bareilles. Subscribe to or follow Finding Felicity on Spotify or iTunes so that you never miss an episode. And please rate and review us to help other folks find us. That is super important for getting our podcast out there. So please do rate and review. And as always, you can listen to the latest Finding Felicity at either fanbasepress.com or pomonokentertainment.com. And if you want to keep up with all things Pomonok, follow us on all socials at Team Pomonok. And Pomonok is spelled P-O-M-O-N-O-K. See you next time on Finding Felicity, because as we see from Bess's experiences well after college, coming of age never seems to stop.
This has been part of the Fanbase Press Podcast Network.